Okay, guys, so we got a few Rash Hole questions for you. Chef Brian Duffy here basically just answering your questions that you put online with the hashtag Rash Hole questions. You can do it anytime, and we like to answer them during the podcast. Duffy, who do we got first, and what's the question?
All right, so we're talking to J.E. Bourdreau, also known as her, this person's hashtag, which we've actually had her or him, I don't know who it is, ask this question before.
Yeah. Her name's Judy, actually. Judy, but her handle is J.E.
Dude, how do you know that?
Because she writes me all the time on Twitter. She's a great fan.
Really?
Yeah, she's really awesome. She's one of these big supporters of the podcast, and she's been following me for a while. So, Judy, keep it up. I love you.
All right. Well, Judy, who is at Phoenix CDN, who's kind of a little profile says, I'm a work in progress, forever learning, always curious, which sometimes gets me in trouble. I like Judy a tremendous amount. And her question, which is one that you and I kind of went back and forth a little bit with, other than your current career, what other jobs have you done and how long did you last? Come on.
Well, okay. I'm gonna let you go after this one first, because I actually have never had any other job in my adult career besides being in the bar. But I had a couple when I was in high school. They're pretty crazy. So,
well, I have done. I used to spray deadly chemicals on trees.
Oh, okay.
Where I had to wear a hazmat suit.
Ooh,
and it was fucking awesome, dude. We would literally like pull into these neighborhoods with this huge truck that we would have to fill with like 1,000 gallons of water. Okay,
just ready to be made into pesticides.
And literally, then they would pour. We used this product called Dursban. I remember Dursban, and I don't know what Dursban did, but I think it was banned. But we would spray it on trees because it would stop the caterpillars and the other stuff. But what we would do is, we would put like the truck in the street, and then we would put our hazmat suits on, even though most of the time we didn't really have to wear the hazmat suit, just to get the neighbors fucking nervous. So we would stand up, and the guy I did it with, his name was Joe Biggs, and his father owned the company, Joe Biggs. Him and I went to school together.
Joe Biggs.
And so we would stand in the street, dude, and like cars would come up, and I'd like put my respirator on, and they'd like holy shit, like get the window up really fast and like cover kids' mouths. And if there were people like walking down the street, they'd like turn around and walk the other way. And half the time we were just spraying, like, it wasn't really deadly chemicals, but yeah, so that was a big one for me.
Sorry, ma'am, you can't come into this quadrant right now.
It was awesome. Once you put that hazmat suit on, it was the best, dude. I was
How old were you?
I was 20.
And yeah. It's got to be one of those like big old yellow hazmat suits with those.
Oh, no, it was a big, huge white one, and I had a red respirator on.
Nice.
And yeah, I was so poor. I literally was so poor. I remember how poor I was. Like, I would eat. I remember having to eat artichokes because they were three for a dollar at Produce Junction.
That's like first world problems.
Yeah, dude, I literally would go to Produce Junction and I would buy like I'd have $6 and I would buy like, you know, a boatload of artichokes. And then I would go home and we would take Triscuits and we would crush up the Triscuits and stuff them inside of the artichokes, and I would do baked stuffed artichokes.
That's like, I mean, but that's like, that's really highbrow for being poor. Let's just be honest. I mean, but I was doing like Vienna sausages on my ramen noodles at my poorest, you know, like sauteing those Vienna sausages, put them on those bad boys. Like, so, okay. My first job was probably the worst dishwashing experience ever. And I was the dishwasher at Golden Corral. Do you know what Golden Corral is?
Oh, no shit, dude.
Yes. Okay. And Sundays of Golden Corral dishwashing after church is the worst, absolute worst experience.
Dude, I
ever.
Can smell it. I can actually smell exactly. I smell what you're talking about.
Oh, just caked on. Oh. I mean, just caked on underneath those lamps. And then, the thing is that you're already going through like when everybody's sitting in church. So it's caked on there pretty good for a good hour before everybody gets out, and then you get slammed, and people don't care about how many dishes, you know, you got to use the more dishes possible. It's more sanitary, you know, and they don't care how many dishes they use. They don't care about how much food they're doing. Oh,
nope.
Worst thing ever. I was a miserable, miserable human being for 2 weeks.
Oh, dude. Okay. All right. Okay. First off, I know what you're talking about. And for anybody who's out there right now, if you've never worked in a restaurant or if you've never had to wash dishes on like a busy night, on any night. It's really the most, it's unfortunately the most thankless job in there, but we wouldn't get anything done if it weren't for them. Yeah. And the smell, dude, I can literally, just the grease and that shit that's on your hands and it goes up your arms. And if you don't have like, and then you're putting like a trash bag on underneath an apron so you're not getting so good when your feet are wet
and you're slipping
sloshing.
Around.
Oh, the worst.
You're using the hose that's
to hold
above
on.
You to wash the dishes to hold your
oh my God.
Stable.
Dude, it's so bad. And you know what's funny is after all those years, I finally realized that if you put, you take your boxes, if you break your boxes down,
yep.
And you put your boxes underneath your mat, it absorbs the water and acts as a suction cup, and you never step in fucking water all day.
Yep. So. You know, it wasn't the last time I washed dishes, but it was definitely the last time I washed dishes at a motherfucking buffet. That was tough.
Oh my God, dude, I couldn't even imagine.
And yeah, and my hat's off to every person out there that does that job.
Yep.
You guys are busting your ass.
Every day. So I lived in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And there was a great bar up in Scranton called Farley's. And Farley's was around for years. Farley's is no longer there, which is a shame because it was a great bar. But I remember I wanted to wait tables. So I went in and I talked to Billy, who was the owner. And I said, hey, I want to wait tables. And he said, okay, cool. But he said, I don't need a waiter right now. But what I need is I need somebody to do dishes for me. Just for like a couple of days until I get this all figured out. Then I'll put you on the wait floor. And I was like, all right, cool, whatever. So I needed a job. I was, I don't know, 18 or 19 years old. No. Yeah, I have no idea how old I was. Maybe 20. who knows? But I wasn't 21. I do remember that. So I started to wash dishes for him. And he gave me like a dishwasher outfit. I had like a short sleeve button up shirt and he gave me like check pants and all that shit. So it was, I worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and I washed dishes the whole time. I'm like, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to be, what are we going to do for the training? What are we going to do for the training? And then for the server position, he's like, I'm going to get you on server on Saturday. I'll bring you in Saturday morning and you can do a training shift. I'm like, all right, cool. No problem. Friday night, the place is fucking packed. There's people everywhere, the whole nine yards. I walk in Saturday morning, and I said, hey, I'm here. You know, I'm ready to go. Let's do my thing. I cleaned up. I did everything I had to do. He's like, no problem. I go in, and he says to me, I can't have you train today. My dishwasher didn't show up. First thing I need you to do is go in and clean the bathrooms.
Boom.
So I looked at him for a second. I looked at him for a second. And walked into the bathroom, and it was as if a shit bomb had exploded in one of the stalls, and somebody had thrown up all over the other stall. And I walked out, I handed Billy my apron, I said, thanks so very much, dude, I'm good. And that was it. I quit. And when I saw him about 15 years later, 10 years later, when I was in that moment, I was doing what I do now, what I did at that point, which was a chef. He fucking reminded me. Do you remember when you walked out on your shift? I was like, you're fucking right, I do. I absolutely remember walking out on that shift.
The best thing I ever did.
Yeah. Billy, man. Billy. I will never forget that. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, okay, the job that I feel like gave me the skills, though, was I was a sacker at a grocery store called Brookshire Brothers after my dishwashing stint at Golden Corral.
Your 2-week stint.
And I was just like the coolest, most badass sacker there was. All the old ladies wanted me to take their carts out to their cars for them.
Did you get tipped?
I got tipped. Awesome. Oh, I made the most in tips. Sure. You know, oh, man. And you know, I had my technique, and that's when I would like spin things in my hand. That's when I started spinning things because I would like try to amuse myself. So I'd spin someone's soap detergent as I'm sticking it in the sack. You know, I would spin to throw around someone's toilet paper rolls or that kind of stuff. And you know, then you got to have to compartmentalize it into all the different sacks, and you literally have to do all this figuring out in your head if you're a good sacker. You know, and then I worked my way up to cash register, cashier. Yeah, that was a big promotion. And you know, I was like working those drawers and everything, and that's what got my cash handling skills on point. So, Brookshire Brothers, I owe you one, man. You guys gave me the skills from just working old ladies to spending my stuff and handling money. That's it.
Brookshire Brothers. Well, I don't think I ever worked. I didn't ever work in a grocery store, but I remember I worked. All right, so I was 16 years old. And I worked for a company called Transamerica. And Trans,
I know that name.
Well, Trans, maybe it wasn't Transamerica. I have no idea. But what it was a telemarketing company. And we used to call girls' college dorms and try to get them to set up a China party, which was like they could win a trip to Galveston, Texas, or like Cancun or something to that effect. But all they had to do was have a party in their dorm room. It was like Tupperware, basically, but it was like China.
Then you come film it. They get all get naked, have fun, whatever.
Exactly. No, this was way before Bang Bus and YouTube or YouPorn and all that stuff. Before the Brazzer brothers showed up. So, but we should call Alexis.
You were the first Brazzer brothers.
We were the first Brazzer brothers. We should call Alexis and see if we can get Alexis on the phone and see if she will talk about Brazzers, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
She worked for them for a while, dude.
Oh, I'd like to know some more. I'd like to know some more.
Maybe we'll call her after this little rant we've got going on. I should text her. Hey, you want to hop on air, Alexis?
Inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah. So I worked there with a guy. I can't remember who my supervisor was, but she was like a total strict person. Like she was always like, okay, you guys, you've been on the phone too long talking to this girl. Well, the thing was, I worked with a guy named Joe Love, who was this black dude.
Joe Love.
So Joe Love was from West Philly, and he was the most dapper motherfucker I've ever seen in my life. Life, dude, like cool pants, and he always had like a good leather jacket on. He was like a good looking dude. Well, him and I used to have conversation, or we used to have little contests to see how many women we could like get to give us their personal phone number. And I was like 16, and then
and this is over the phone, trying to get him to get the personal phone number.
But what we would do is we would call their dorm phones. So like we would try to, because a lot of times they had like different phone numbers or something like that. I don't know how it worked, dude. I was 16. This was many years ago, but we would try to get them to actually call us back and talk to us. That's what it was. So we would get these girls, and I remember like girls would be coming and they'd say, hey, our football team, I'm a cheerleader. Our football team is playing Temple this weekend. Can we meet? I'm coming with a bunch of my girlfriends. So I'm 16 years old, dude, and I'm hanging out with Joe Love, who's like 19 or 20.
Joe Love.
And I'm like this little kid from this like, you know, suburb of Philadelphia, like a nicer little wealthier area. And I'm hanging out with Joe Love from West Philly. And dude, we met these chicks. I remember a couple of times we would meet these. I mean, one time we met these girls from University of Delaware. And we like drove around and totally hooked up with them. And I was 16. And we went to the Five Points Bar in West Philly, which was the only bar that we could get into. And we were
You were 16?
Yeah, we were drinking Brass Monkey. Brass fucking Monkey, dude.
Boom, with Joe Love.
With Joe Love in West Philly.
The type of guy that maybe he wasn't 21, but he could always get alcohol.
Joe Love, he was the dude. I'm looking him up right now. Joe, I remember his last name. That's so funny. There we go. No shit. Is that him? No. No, that's a different dude. I'm gonna find this motherfucker.
Does he have like 17 kids?
No, I used to have a guy who worked for me. He was a dishwasher, and he had eight and a grand. He was 42, Russell. He had eight kids and a grandchild.
Bam.
He was a rock star.
Bam.
He was a rock star. Okay, so that was probably one of the most fun, crazy jobs that I had. And then I did restaurants. I did restaurants all the time.
Yeah, that's what I ended up doing. I left sacking and got my first waiting job, and then by the time I was 18 years old, I was in bars. I mean, besides growing up on the peach farm and everything, I mean, that was just work from the very beginning, but it was work outside the family that I was talking about.
Yeah.
Cool.
Dude, I still love the peach farm story. I do. That's so cool, man. You know what? Because it's so funny how what we did as kids led us to the work ethic that we have now. Led us into whatever it is. Like, I mean, my father owned his own custom kitchen and bath company. So I worked as a carpenter. I worked as a plumber, as an electrician, I was a roundsman basically for all these, mm-hmm. these contractors that worked for my father that to this day, I remember my ex-girlfriend Jill, her and I had first started dating, and she's a rock star chick, dude, rock star chick. And when she had first moved into her apartment, she said to me, she's like, I need to find somebody who can hang pictures.
And I'm like done.
I'm like, what are you talking? And I literally showed up. I had like a toolbox, dude. Like I had like a bucket, the 5 gallon bucket with all my shit in it. And I showed up, and she was in love with me that day. From that day forward, she was in love with me because I could hang shit.
Where's the studs?
Exactly. I got a stud finder right over here. Yep, I do. I've got two stud finders.
The farm. It was like, you know, if you didn't get out there and spray those peaches for with the, you know, for to keep those bugs away, or if you didn't get out there and and try to keep those trees warm during a freeze some way, shape, or form. You know, it wasn't like you lost your job. It was like the family would not earn their living for the year. You know what I'm saying? So it was no choice of whether or not we were going to be working or not. It was work.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Were you up at like 4 in the morning?
Oh man, there was times whenever we would have these last minute freezes, and we would come too late in the spring and the orchard and the peaches had already bloomed, just at that time frame where the fruit hasn't developed so it can't protect itself in these type of freezes, and the bloom will just die. And, you know, people, some of the farms out there, you know, everybody had their own techniques, from like staying up all night and burning tires at certain parts in the orchards to keep things warm, to trying to hang up, you know, last minute sprinkler systems to run over water over the trees constantly so they would never freeze throughout the night. I mean, I can remember many nights staying up all night long, hiring extra, you know, workers to come help out my family, to literally like work our way through it and figure out what we had to do to keep those trees alive.
So that's crazy. And was your whole area, was it like a peach growing area, or were they growing everything?
It was growing everything. So you saw everything, you know, just East Texas just is very, very fertile. So just a little bit of everything out there. Some of the places around us had, you know, a few decently large peach farms. We were 3,500 trees, but you know, it was just a combination of everything. You know, the work and the life out there, if it's not oil, it's lumber or farming. So
wow. That's cool, man. Nice.
Yeah, nice.
All right. So should we do another one?
Yeah, let's do another one.
All right, so
I'm bringing up a couple right now. I accidentally clicked out of the rash hole questions.
Hey, Judy, I want a message too. Don't you say hi to me?
Yeah, Judy, thank you for the question, because you're just always awesome and so happy that you're excited about what we do in our life. Okay, so here, I got one.
Go for it.
So this one is from Christina C., another one of our adoring, amazing, beautiful fans.
Who sent us a video message?
She sent us a video message the other day asking us when we were coming to New York.
Mm-hmm.
But she asked us a question that's very interesting, and I kind of love it. But and her handle on Twitter is at KCONN05. She's a bartender, a pit bull advocate, and a makeup artist. she's a New York Mets fan also. But her question is, how does it feel having so many fangirls? P.S. When is our wedding? Duffy, how does it feel having so many fangirls out there?
But the one thing that you're forgetting to mention, Russell, is that she sent a video, and in the video, her boyfriend was like, "Why the fuck are we doing this?" He literally, like, hold on, I gotta play it.
Yeah, but we want to know stuff a lot.
When you're coming to New York. Yeah, and then he makes this, like, he purses his lips at the end of the video. We have to, I'm posting this right now. I'm retweeting it. We're answering your question right now. So how does it feel having so many fangirls? You know, I mean, I don't know, dude. I like women. I like that they send us cool messages and that they talk to us and all that fun stuff. I think it's awesome, man. I don't even know how to answer that question. I'm going to have to give it a quick thought. You go.
I got it. Well, you know, the thing is,
I know you got it.
It's very awesome for me, because I couldn't talk to girls growing up. Could not talk to girls growing up. Got my first kiss like very late on in life. My first girlfriend very late on in life. So I don't know. I think that just women are the most beautiful creatures on this planet. But I will say that it does get weird sometimes. And I think Duffy can attest to this. But there's been those times where, you know, we have been at events and a husband and wife will come up and the wife will hit on you, and the husband will literally look at you and be like, "Do you want to take my wife home?"
Oh, Jesus.
And that's when it gets weird.
Yeah. Yeah. It is weird, dude.
And it happens more often to us than you would imagine, right?
Well, I mean, it's odd. It is very odd. You know, I mean, look, I'm a short fat guy. I'm pretty happy with my life and I have a good time. But some of these people are very aggressive.
Very aggressive.
Very aggressive. I mean, I had a woman who sent me a Twitter message about 2 or 3 days ago. And she said, "I just want to know where you're going to be, because I just want to meet you and I just want to hang out with you." And I'm like, I'm a pretty innocent dude. Like, I just, you know, I try to be nice to everybody. And so we kind of started a little conversation back and forth. I said, oh, hey, you know, I travel all the time. And, you know, we do appearances. And I said, Russell and I are doing some stuff in Reno in a couple of weeks. And then she was like, well, you know, would I be able to just stay with you? And I'm like, well, no. No, probably not. No, that's not going to happen. And I'm not like a dirtball like that. So, you know, I mean, I'm not going to go after that. That's just not the way that I play. But it was weird, dude. It was really weird. And then she started to get very aggressive. Like, yeah. I just want to meet you. That's all I want to do. Why won't you meet me? And I said, hey, look, you're starting to make me feel a little uncomfortable. I'm not comfortable with the situation and all that. And then I just had to block her. That was it. Done. Clear. Say goodbye to Hollywood. You're gone. So if you wonder why I'm not replying back to you, my friend, it's because you're fucking crazy. So
until you come home and she's there and she's just like, I just wanted to meet you, Duffy. But you know, had to meet me.
And then the one thing that I have to think about is I have daughters, dude.
Yeah.
I have daughters. So, yep. You know, like then I had a conversation with my daughter. I'm like, don't chase boys. And I mean, Em's a really cool kid. She's 15. She's a rock. She's a total super cool kid. And she beats to her own drum and all that stuff. But I had to have a conversation with her and say, like, you know, there's flirting, there's playing, there's there's catty, like you can, there's nothing wrong with that. I said, but don't ever chase after a boy at all.
No.
I said, and I also may have a rule for her. If a boy ever makes you cry, then he's going to make you cry for the rest of your life. So.
Yep. Have more, you gotta define how much respect they're going to have for you.
Yeah. And I want to know what people think about that because I'm very aggressive with my girls. I'm very aggressive with them in the thought that I try to teach them and go after what you want. And, you know, Emily and I are doing a thing right now because she's doing crew and all the other stuff. And so I'm like, I'm trying to be a good dad, but at the same time, I'm trying to be that business mentor. And so she goes after what she wants. So if you guys have thoughts about that, I would love to know what your thoughts are on that. So. I mean, and I do, I've made some really super, super cool friends through Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
On Facebook, which yeah. or on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that stuff. Like, I really, like, I mean, and Russell, I'm saying like actual friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what's interesting is we've actually used some of the people that we've met on Twitter in our businesses. You know, we bring them in and, you know, if we see, but, you know, and by the way, ladies, and I have a very big, a population of, gay gentlemen who love gay guys.
Love gay
please,
guys.
Please do not stop. Keep on bringing, sending the messages.
No dick pics.
Yeah. No dick pics. No more dick pics. Did you see that ad trying to track down that I posted on social media of that guy trying to track down a picture of my hot bulge, as he put it.
Really? Where's this placed?
Yeah, it's somewhere on one of my social medias. I posted it this past week.
Nice, dude.
Came across this ad from a gentleman named Mountain Mike Kern.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Mountain Mike.
And he apparently thinks I'm a hot ginger bar master. I never knew I was a ginger, but I'm honored. I'm honored, Mountain Mike. If you can find a pic out there, you know, let me know.
Yeah, I got a bulge. Yeah. I got a bulge too. I don't use socks or anything. I'm good. I mean, it's not like you've never heard of like an Irish porn star, but I'm good. I think I'm pretty good. I've taken care of business for the last bunch of years. Good. No socks needed in this case. It's fun. I actually have this guy that I met years ago. His name is the Gailey Gourmet, GAILYGORMET, and he's a really really cool dude. And I remember he invited me to his coming out launching party for something that he had done. And I went up to New York.
His coming out launch party.
But it was a launch for a product that he had, and it was his coming out party, like kind of at the same time. I mean, everybody knew he was gay anyway, but he was. He's a super cool dude. And so please follow him. He's the Gailey Gourmet, GAILY Gourmet. And he's a really good dude. And I can't remember. I'm looking him up right now. I can't remember his first name, but he's a super, super cool dude. And now I can't find him, but I'll find him again. Yeah, he's a really cool guy. And he invites me to his parties every year. And I don't know. I just like I love going into the gay bars in the city because I have fun, man. Because everybody's in such a great fucking mood.
Okay, so I got a little story about that. So so I had this buddy of mine. His name's Mason. Mason, big shout out to you out there. So Mason used to work as the security, and I promoted him up at this one bar that I worked at, from security to bar back. Really good looking guy, blonde. You know, he was one of these athletic, you know, sports guys too. And he really wanted to work up in the industry. I won't say that he was necessarily made for the bar industry, but he thought it was cool. So, you know, I promoted him up in this one bar, you know, just worked his way up all the way and tried gave him his chance. But, you know, the thing about Mason was Mason was raised in a way that I don't necessarily, well, not by his family, but just in the Southern, very, very Southern way of being a little bit homophobic. And I'm not saying all Southerners are this way, but there are certain of this mindset that still exists. And, you know, he was also very stubborn. So we had separated and gone, worked our separate paths at different bars. And then he had gone off and worked for some major bar families in Austin. And he became a bartender and a really well-known bartender. But then he had just gotten so stubborn at some of these jobs that he just quit. And he literally burned his bridges down with all these really major bar people. And he comes to me and he's like, you know, Russell, what can I do for getting in, you know, work? And I'm like, well, you know, I mean, right now you've burned your bridges all here and there, and if you really need to make some money, you know, and you're a good looking guy, you'd be great to work at the gay bar. And of course he was would not have it, you know. And he what he would say was, I don't want people to be gay on me or around me, or he's like, I'm not homophobic, I just don't want people to be gay on me or around
on me.
Yeah, and
love
just
it
like, yeah. And I'm just like, no, Mason, that's homophobic. And I used to give him a hard time about being homophobic. And, well, then finally things got so bad for him that he finally was like, okay, who's the number of the bar manager? And I gave it to him, you know, because I knew all the bar managers in town. He went, ended up getting a job there. A few weeks later, I had to walk over to that bar and borrow a bottle of something or other. And I walk in, and Mason is on the top of the bar on his knees with a bottle of Bailey's on his crotch, humping back and forth and flinging Bailey's all over this crowd of men.
There you go. Gotta get the tips. Gotta get the tips.
Best thing ever.
Dude, that's awesome. That's a riot. Well, you know, my sister's best friend and actually ex-boyfriend was voted best gay bartender in Philadelphia.
Beautiful.
Yeah, he's a rock star. Total rock star. Great dude. Really, really good guy. He's a very, very close friend of the family. And he's he was voted best gay bartender in Philadelphia. So so it's funny because I remember one night we all had gone down into the gay bars and into the gayborhood in Philly. And we went to this place called Woody's. And we walk in and I walk up to the bar and there's the guy behind the bar, Rich, and Rick, he looks over and he's like, oh my God, I haven't seen you for years. And he's like totally, totally buff, like no shirt on, like tight jeans, the whole nine yards. And he's like high-fiving me over the bar. I hand him a $20 bill. I order like 5 Bud bottles or whatever it was we were drinking that night. And he hands me 5 Bud bottles and $21 bills back. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be one of those nights.
That's a great
And then we went to a drag show after that. I actually just had a call from a guy who owns a gay bar, a gay nightclub in East L.A. that mm-hmm. we're going to do a project with. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Bam.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
So, all right. So, so we totally went off on a tangent on that question. But let's do one more question. By the way, Christina's replying back to us as we talk right now. So.
Oh, excellent.
I actually like this question. Well, here's a funny one. So this is from Chris Herniak. Well, let's go back to, should we do another Judy one or should we go on to somebody else and come back to Judy later?
We'll come back to Judy.
Okay.
Come back to Judy.
Yeah. So Chris Herniak, who is, I think I'm saying his name right. Chris Herniak is a bartender and a perspiring chef from New York. I love it. I don't know why I don't follow him. I thought I followed him, but he has a good question. He said he wants to know who would win in a wrestling match between me and Russell.
Whoa.
It's a tough question, man. I wrestled from sixth grade up into high school, and I was really good, dude. I only lost one time to a guy named Joe Barr.
Yeah?
Yeah. One time. I will never. Joe Barr. Yeah, I remember. It was cool. I had loved wrestling. I was really good. I was a great athlete as a kid.
Well, you know, I don't know if it, you know, it depends on what's at stake here. You know, if it was just like a wrestling match for fun, I'd probably laugh or just like not like get into it all the way. But if it was like a true like life or stakes game, like I'm talking about most dangerous game style.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to put up a fight. I don't play fair. It's not going to be a wrestling match. I'm going to be going after.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's going to be UFC shit right there.
Oh, I mean, even worse than UFC. I'm going to be grabbing your balls to survive. I don't care.
Okay, well, I got big balls. I really do. You're gonna need a bigger hand.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be doing like the face thing where you poke your fingers into the eye sockets.
Yeah, you'll like pick up sand. You'll have sand in your hand, like, and I'll come at you. You'll throw sand right in my
pick
eyes.
Pick the shit up out of some sand. Well, throw it right in your
which,
head.
Oddly enough, right now I have a picture of you and me in like a kid's park in a sandbox. Wrestling. Mommy, what's going on over there?
I'm seeing that scene from Ace Ventura 2 where he has to fight the tribal man.
I remember like two lines from Ace Ventura 1. You broke out Ace Ventura 2. I can't even imagine what happened in that one.
I wouldn't do that if I were you, Ace. Well, if I were you, then you'd be me and I'd still use your body. So you can't stop me no matter who you are.
Nice. You know, one, Russell and I would never have to wrestle each other. That's number one. Two, I've got some extra weight on top of Russell, so I would probably just lay on top of him until he couldn't breathe anymore.
I'm gonna have to go with Duffy winning the wrestling match.
After a long fight, though.
Oh, after a long fight.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of crying.
A lot of crying. Yeah, absolutely.
Probably some laughing
and some ball grabbing.
Yeah. But like I said,
from behind, like pulled down and backward.
Yeah.
Ball grabbing.
But from a standpoint, if it was no holds barred, anything can go, I'd say I'd have a chance because I've got a fucking sick mind and I think of some awful stuff. Yeah.
And I haven't let loose in multiple years. So I think it would go on for at least a little while between the two of us. And then one of us would, it would just go. Okay. Well, and you know, that's kind of a funny thing because now it's funny that we're having that because now it kind of leads into our next conversation.
Yeah, this actually does.
It kind of leads right in. So
although the Q&A comes in after.
Damn it. It does.
So this is going to be very meta for all of you listeners out here.
Damn
formatting.
So we're
going to lead into what we talked to you about on the first part.
I think. I hate production. Can we just be talent?
Where's my trailer?
Seriously,
where's my trailer?
Absolutely. Where's my green M&Ms and my straw that goes...
throwing out all the W's.
Do you know I had green M&Ms on season 2 of Bar Rescue?
Like they just brought you green M&Ms?
Yeah. I can't remember the producer's name, but this was just prior to me getting my own agent when I signed with WME. And I remember negotiating my own contract that time. And it was a kind of a joke. Like in reality, I didn't negotiate it. I had one of my buddies who was an agent negotiate my new rate for that season. And so when her and I had finally gotten down to the end of it, I said, you know, and the only other thing, I don't know if you have seen this in there yet or not. I want to know why, but I want to know where my green M&Ms are. And it was a joke. Like I was just joking around because for anybody who doesn't know, Van Halen once had in their rider because nobody was paying attention to riders, green M&Ms in their rider. So they knew that if they got there and there weren't green M&Ms on the table, then they didn't pay attention to their rider. So I had offered. So the first season we go in, or second season, first episode, I go into tape and I walk in and I go into the trailer because we had a trailer for this episode for some reason. And I sit down and in walks the producer and she walks over with a bottle of water, sets it down next to me with a straw next to it, and she hands me a 1 pound of green M&Ms. And I was like, "You're awesome!"
Oh, wow. And then you go eat with the crew, and there's like 6 pounds of every color and other color.
Of every other color, exactly. Yeah, that's pretty much the way that worked. Yep. Yeah, and there's a PA over there with green fingers and red fingers. I hate fucking Duffy. Fucking Duffy.
Fuck that chef.
Such an asshole. He's going to scream at me later.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was a good one. So...
Hey, boys and girls, welcome back to your latest episode of the Road Rash Podcast. I got Chef Brian Duffy with me here on the line. Hey, Duff.
Hola, my friend.
And we got some cool guests this week. But first, we're going to start you out with our weekly little rants. You know, and we've been reading up on the subjects that you guys have really been interested in, and also what's keeping us interested. And I'm going to start this week talking about bar fights. Now, wow. Duffy, you and I have seen quite a few of these, and with the release of the comic this past, couple of weeks, you're about to notice that Duffy and I both started out as working security and bouncers in bars, so we've seen our fair share.
Yeah, I'm no stranger. I actually, bounced my way through culinary school. I was a bouncer at a place called the Maine Lion in Devon, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, and I worked there. I did two jobs for free. I worked at the Four Seasons for free at my apprenticeship. I worked at a place called the Ristorante San Marco, which is an awesome Italian restaurant for free. I went to culinary school full time, and then I bounced making $8 an hour at the Maine Lion, and there was some crazy shit that went on out there, man.
Yeah, man. Wait, what years were you bouncing in?
Well, so this was, I mean, I'm old, dude, but this was 93, 94, 95.
These are the rougher days of the bar industry.
Yeah, really, too. Really. And I mean, not much has changed. I mean, except now there's more, I'm going to sue you when I see stuff anymore.
Yeah.
But this was like, this. I think Roadhouse came out like a couple of years later. When did Roadhouse come out?
Ooh, I don't know.
That was a great movie.
Oh, you know, I had a job that I was kind of like the modern day Roadhouse for a bit.
1989.
Yeah, so right afterwards.
You there?
Yep, I'm there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
I think we just put a pause.
We did. I think I was supposed to say something profound? Like, yes, you were.
We're both so trigger happy that we're going to lose each other that whenever just like we pause, we just
we automatically assume that. I gotta understand, like Russell tapes from like a random coffee shop or like a random apartment or like a deck somewhere, you know, something to that effect. Yeah. So
we're constantly losing each other.
I know.
But yeah. No, this one time, by the way, working front of the house and working as a bar manager and bartender for many years, you're basically working security the entire time too, but I did start out as full-fledged security. Over the course of my career, I've pended 7 assault with deadly weapon charges against people. I've been run over. I've had to kick someone out, had someone come after me with their car, had to jump on the hood of the car and ride it through the parking lot until I was flung off after we kicked them out from a fight. I've had mini knives pulled out on me, been bitten twice, had a couple of guns pulled out on me.
And you posted a picture the other day.
Yeah, that was actually one
from 05.
Yeah, 05. I was breaking up a bar fight in 05. Saw my buddy who is a bar security guard that I knew really well. I was working at the bar down the way, and he was kicking some people in a giant bar fight out, and he was working one of those nights where he wasn't fully staffed and needed some help. And he looked over at me and kind of waved me in, and I came in to help him out and went to go take out one guy from behind and realized there was a bunch more people involved in the fight and got taken down, and the shit just absolutely kicked out of me. Woke up in a CAT scanner. Yeah.
Jesus, dude.
Yeah, that's why the reason I have one dimple. It separated a muscle in my face. Someone hit me or kicked me so hard in the face, it separated a muscle. Yeah, and I have one dimple now.
Jeez.
Yeah, but the craziest one was not the craziest fight, but the one time one of these jobs I had was going back into East Texas and helping open up this bar in this very, very crazy part of Texas, you know, where race wars were very, very prevalent. And unfortunately, this bar had, I was brought into a security staff that were all these very, very racist, I hate to use the term, you know, redneck derogatorily, because, you know, redneck is something that many people are proud of as well. But they were the derogative style of redneck. They were starting more race fights than anything being security. And you would have anybody that was a different color that would come into this place, and it would start a gigantic brawl. And so I remember basically walking in one day and getting rid of all of the security guards and handed them all of their last paychecks. And I just so happened to hire a bunch of ex-military African-American gentlemen that worked on the oil rigs as roughnecks that were on their 2 weeks off period to come in as work security, and never had another problem with race wars ever again.
There you go.
But we've seen some bar fights break out that have just been very awful, whether it be over race, whether it be over just being too drunk, and it's never the answer.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, here's a study that was done. $918,856 spent on a federal study to find that bar fights tend to happen in darker, dirtier bars frequented by heavy drinking, less agreeable people. I'm not even kidding you, dude. This is from CNSnews.com. So the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism paid $918,000 for a 5-year study on this. And it was that researchers based on 2 telephone surveys, bar characteristics that are related to the occurrence of violence included smokiness, noise, temperature, dirt, darkness, crowding, poor ventilation. Dude, if you put me into a bar that was smoky, that was too loud, that was too hot, that was constantly dirty, where I couldn't see anything and there were too many people and there was no ventilation, guess what? I'm going to beat the shit out of somebody. I mean, this is a horrific thing. This is...
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, you know, and that's why also the front of the house staffs, guys, you got to be very cognizant of the attitudes that you portray and that you put off towards your staff. I mean, towards your customers and just the environment of the room around you, because you are part of what can make that an aggressive situation for people.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I was bartending in the early 90s, or bouncing in the early 90s. And you know what? It wasn't what we see today, which is what there were no cell phones. You know, there wasn't a video camera every single place that you looked. So, you know, we got away with shit. I mean, I mentioned it once before. We used to have contests with me and some of the guys that I bounced with to see how many face prints we could put on the front door when we kicked people out. And I mean, it sounds like a crazy thing, but we were at a bar. It was a really busy nightclub. We had great bands and stuff like that that would come in. So it would get loud and rowdy, and people got thrown out all the time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it wasn't what it is today. I mean, people are dirty today, man. They're dirty. They fight dirty. They've got shit in their boots, and they've got shit in their pockets. And, you know, I mean, it's just crazy, dude. And they're really aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
Really aggressive. Yeah. So even if you're trying to be backed off, you're trying to back off a little bit. You know, I mean, I deal with it now. Like, I've been in some bars in the past and with clients and stuff where things have gotten a little bit loud late night. And, you know, and Russell, you know, when we do some of these events and appearances that we do, it's in a bar. It's in a bar setting. You know, so there's alcohol around. People are feeling a little bit tough. Let's say that their girlfriend looks at you. Maybe she comes over and has a conversation with you. Like, I've had aggressive situations like this stuff happen on appearances.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Me too.
I'm very careful of what I do, man. I've got rules of me being on the road, especially when it comes to going into bars and stuff. Big time rules. So. Yeah.
And especially even being the one doing the appearance, I've had to back people up against the wall and get them out of bars and stuff. You know, it's not fun situations ever.
Yeah. It's bad. It's scary, man. Mm-hmm. And you think about what can happen to us. I mean, other than just, I mean, look, I'm not a fighter. I've kind of nailed that down. I'm not. It's just not the way that I play. I'm a really peaceful dude these days. But man, there were some ugly days there, dude. There were some ugly days. So
I'm not a fighter, but there's been times where I've had to, you know, either defuse or be the one in the situation where I had to dig it out, you know? Or had to make the calls of doing something that might be physical, you know, like that's always the tough part, even as security, when you've got this situation that you can tell is escalating, and when you have to physically realize when you have to lay the hand on someone to get them out there, you know, that's also the really just the toughest situation. And, you know, to me, it was one of the one thing that would just get you kicked out, you know, you got hands laid on you and you were out of the bar in no time flat by either me or my security, was the disrespect or any kind of touch or anything with having to do with females.
Oh yeah.
If you ever did anything like that, it was, and that's the few times I could say that as I was kicking them out, maybe I got a little bit of enjoyment out of, you know, planting their face on the door on the way out or not.
now, do you deal with security at all with Unlimited? I mean,
I bring in subcontractors with security. So, ones that can actually be licensed to help come in and train and to do that kind of stuff. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I mean, now do you do any training of any of that stuff yourself, or is that all?
Minor. If it is training, it's very, very minor on my own terms when it's with bar staffs that are small enough where they're not going to need security. If it's a bar staff that needs security, then I definitely bring in somebody.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what was the worst fight that you ever saw?
You know, there's been so many of them. There's one that happened in the alleyway back behind when I was managing a bar called Speakeasy. We had an alleyway that had many different bars that opened up into it. It was in Austin, Texas. It was actually the same alleyway that a lot of the scenes of Sin City were filmed in. But a lot of bars exited into it, and we had two bars that were on each side of the alley throwing. Each one was throwing a separate Asian, a party for Asian social groups. And so what you ended up having was these Asian gangs. And these two gangs at the end of the night, after everybody was getting kicked out of the clubs, ended up having this giant fight in the alleyway that was just ridiculous. You know, people were, literally dozens of bottles were being flung through the air. I saw a guy getting stabbed, you know, right in front of us. It was one of those situations where we and my security had to go out into the alley and pull all of our customers and everybody that we could back into the bar and everybody that we could keep safe, and then literally shut the doors and deadbolt them and put up a all the security so that no one could get in.
Wow.
And watch the rest of it from the camera. Yeah. That was a nuts. Someone died, if I remember
Holy
correctly,
shit.
Right in the alley that day. Yeah.
Well, as a bouncer, the worst thing that I had ever seen was when we were this was so bad. We would literally the lawsuits that would happen from this conversation from this one night were deadly, dude. I mean, so what happened was it was December or January. Things were really, really. We had one of our biggest bands in, which is a band called Loveseed Mama Jump, which was a great band. I loved these guys. They actually ended up becoming like kind of friends when they were in that little world that they did of bars and all that stuff. They had a commercial that somebody, they bought their music for like a Chevy commercial. It was pretty cool, but they were really good guys and a great band.
Yeah.
And so it was really cold outside. We had like 1,500 people in the club. We still had people lined up on the ramp to come into the bar. And one of the fire suppression system had burst because it was so cold. So it started shooting water into the foyer of the nightclub, which is to go. This is where the bathrooms were. This is where you walked in from the ramp.
Sounds like the coolest nightclub party ever.
Oh, well, the worst part is I mean, you have to understand there's like, I don't know how many thousand pounds of, or how many thousand, pressure. You know, PSI is in there,
yeah.
Or what the PSI of this is, but it's a fire suppression system. So yeah. It burst at the end of it, which was in the lobby of, or the foyer of this nightclub. So as it's starting to happen, it's so fucking cold out, dude, that the water is now pouring out the front door and down the ramp and freezing. So now we were having like ice crystals start to form on the inside of the lobby to get into the nightclub, and the only place to go to the bathroom is to the right of this area. There was like a hostess stand, there was like a big double door, and then the two bathrooms that were over to the right hand side. Well, we had to keep people in the bar.
Mm-hmm.
We locked the doors,
mm-hmm.
and held everybody in the bar. We wouldn't let them leave. So now, like, I'm looking, and I'm the guy who has to hold the door because my boss, yeah. Who was my buddy that I've known since I was 4 years old, is like, Duff, close the doors, dude. Nobody can come out here. It's starting to freeze. So I put, like, a piece of wood in between the door handles, and these people are now, like, bang. I felt like I was watching Walking Dead a couple months ago,
and it
reminded me of that because there's all these people, and now they're, like, starting to press up, and I can see, like, the door starting to bulge, like, because they're pressing so hard on the doors. And it was, dude, I'm not kidding, probably 10, 15 minutes that we locked these people in. And I'm trying to tell them, like, go out the back door, go out the other way. Well, nobody can hear me because the band's still playing. It was so bad, dude.
And they're just getting pissed off.
And they're getting more and more pissed off. And now they're like banging heads against the window. And so I finally just opened the doors. And the worst part is that it froze where I was standing, so the doors wouldn't open all the way.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so bad, dude. I will never forget that night.
People don't understand that our jobs as front of the house. Well, some people don't understand our jobs as front of the house. Is you know, we're not just dealing with one-on-one situations, but we're having to learn how to deal with crowds. And yeah. Dealing with mob mentality and crowds are just a different situation all their own. And you know, the worst times for me is those moments when you, as a bar manager, a bartender, a security, or anything, when you start losing control of the crowd, those moments are the scariest.
Yep.
Yeah, and I remember moments when we would have a fight break out, you know, one of my bars where it would become so, and, you know, unexpected situations, you know, and always, always, and will happen, Murphy's Law. But you can see the crowd literally
turn,
you know, whole crowd turn. And that's the worst situation. That's when you know that you're on the phone with the cops, you're on the phone with everybody trying to get this thing disseminated, because you cannot control it anymore. And it's hard to do that.
Yeah, it's bad. And, you know, I mean, and I talk about it all the time when I, because I mean, you know, you and I are in bars all the time, and we see this stuff happen all the time. You know, mm-hmm. we see the downfall. I was at a bar in Rockford, Illinois, a couple months ago. Great bar, great bar. And I get there, and it was a really weird situation. But the owner started to kick everybody out, and the guy said, and I listened to the guy, the bouncer, if you don't work here and you don't sleep here, get the fuck out.
Yeah, if you don't work here, sleep here, or someone who works here, get the fuck out.
And the thing is that was the last thing that I wanted. Like, I wanted to go to a bar that was fun and full and all the other stuff. And then the guys are just walking up to patrons, and they're just grabbing their bottles and putting the bottles down and being like, get out. Everybody get out. Come on, get out. And, you know, I mean, there's a way to do that. Look, if you're in the nightclub and stuff like that, take back off, man. Take a little bit of time. And, you know, so you start a little bit earlier. So you start at 1:15 instead of, you know, at 1:30 or 1:45 or whatever it is when everybody's got to be out. You know, you start the reminder phase. You start that, hey, and you really that is, in my opinion, the most important part, because this is where you're seeing your clientele.
Yeah.
You know, the lights might get turned up a little bit, but now you're really able to pay attention to these people, and you're able to look at them and say, okay, this guy doesn't need any more drink. He can't have a last call. Mm-hmm. He can't have this or that. This is where the responsibility level really comes into play. I mean, I was in a little town in New Jersey the other night with some friends of mine, and we sat at a bar, and this isn't bar fight, but there was a girl who was sitting at the bar, and she was shit-faced, dude. I mean, the boyfriend, I'm assuming it was the boyfriend, he finally picked her up and had to carry her out of the bar. And I felt bad for him and her. And me, as a nice guy, like, I went over and moved the bar stool out of the way so we could go over. I even went over and opened the door. And I came back, and one of my friends was with me. And she looked at me and she said, I hope to God she doesn't get raped tonight. And I'm like, wow. What the fuck? I'm like, what? I'm like, why didn't you say that to me 12 seconds ago?
Yeah.
Well, you know, like,
where were you?
See, exactly. Like, I didn't even think of that. I guess it's because I'm just a nice guy, and I think that people, you know, you don't take advantage of people. I have no idea. But she really brought it to my attention of the fact that she's like, you realize that you just, if that's the scenario, you just helped this guy get this girl out of the bar.
Yeah.
And I'm like, nah, I'm like, you're a bitch. I can't believe you. Now I'm all night long, I'm thinking that this poor girl, like, I'm gonna, you know, we're going to hear about her dead in a ditch somewhere. And it was bad, man. But. Mm-hmm.
But because everybody's safety is inherently upon us.
It totally is. And even the bartender, because the bartender had recognized me. Really nice guy, actually. Really, really nice guy. His name was Dave. He recognized me from the show, and he looked at me, and immediately he's like, dude, she was fine like 7 minutes ago. And then that was when my friend looked at me, and she's like, see? She's like, maybe he put something in her drink. I'm like, my God. I'm like, what are you doing to me? This is all I'm going to be thinking about for the next fucking 24 hours.
No kidding.
So I hope she's okay, and I hope all that good stuff. And I hope that my good deed of trying to help this guy carry this girl out to her car, because she was, I don't know, his sister. Who knows? Maybe. I have no idea, but it wasn't pretty. So.
Man. Well, you know, you brought up something that was interesting about the reminder phase. You know, There's so many of these bars that it feels like the securities have this pent up like tension all night long, that they just take it out on their customer by ripping beer bottles out of their hands and kicking them out of the bar come 2 or 2:15, you know, a.m. And, you know, certain other times, you know, in other spots in the country or in the world. You know, there's some bars that I feel like have done some great things to fix that and give reminders to people that literally show them, hey, it's time to go. Almost like a Pavlov's Love's Dog type of scenario. In one of the most famous was Employees Only in New York, where, you know, bars would start passing out either little espresso cups full of chicken broth or chicken soup or beef broth at the very end. And as soon as you got your, you know, all the crowd got their little cups of beef broth, you know, they drank it. It was a nice little thing at the end of the night before you went home, and they knew it was time to go. And it was almost like they had the crowd trained to know that they didn't have to do last call. As soon as everybody was getting their beef broth or chicken broth, it was time to go.
And then, but then now you get sued because, well, I'm a vegetarian.
That's true.
You know, I'm a vegan. I can't believe you gave this to me. And then it's going to end up all over Yelp. because of the fact. I mean, come on. Crazy. I mean, you know, we just did it. We did it. I mean, even in the 90s, we did it in the weird way. You know, we were kind of rude. And but at that time, I didn't know. I didn't know the industry the way that I know it now. I didn't know what I needed to get done or what I had to say or any of that stuff. So I really do. I talk to security all the time because, you know, I walk into bars in and out, and you see it too, man. You walk and it's there's like this. This pent-up energy that you said, that they just stand there and they're just waiting for something to happen. Yeah. And I really do think that a lot of times, not all the time, that it really is the fault of security.
Yep. And then they end up old and bitter Bob the Enforcer.
Bob the Enforcer. Every episode, my man's got to rear his ugly head no matter what. Bob's coming out, beer belly, you know? He's like an opium addict now.
Yeah.
He just smoking.
He never compartmentalized that.
No. He never beaten hookers up, you know? No more therapy. Now he just goes straight to beating hookers up. Yeah. That's a lot of poor Bob, the enforcer.
Oh, man, it's a Bob. Shame.
Bob. It's bad. It's bad. Aye, aye, aye. All right. Well, let's I don't know. You want to wrap that up?
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of got there. You know, I just wanted to kind of talk about it. It was an interesting subject because a lot of people had talked about it on the podcast. We wanted to give you a little insight to everybody listening in onto what the bar fights, you know, what bar fights really are like and how we really do feel about those type of situations. And also maybe to get some insights to the front of the house to how they can qualm some of that and to handle these things better. And to always remember that, guys, it's us that control the situation.
Absolutely. So. That's it right there. We you nailed it, dude. It all comes down to training. Look, if you're going to have a fight, you start to see a fight happen. Guess what? You get your two guys go over, you walk over, you very gently have a conversation with the guys. You put an arm on either shoulder and you say, hey, let's walk outside and have a conversation about this.
Yep.
So much can happen going out the front door. But here's one thing I want to say. Do you know who the director of Roadhouse from 1989 was?
No.
His name was Rowdy Harrington.
Of course it was. Of course.
Rowdy, dude. I love it. Rowdy Harrington.
I'm not the best. Wade Garrett's the best.
Yeah. Yep. Wade Garrett, dude. Dude, Sam Elliott.
Best.
Sam Elliott. Best. He was the best. He was the absolutely. Best. Absolutely.
Wade Garrett.
All right.
Well, so Duffy, you had something you wanted to bring up and talk about, right?
I do, but I got to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
I got to pee. So I think we have to take a break.
After a word from our sponsors.
Yeah, a word from our sponsors. By the way, who wants to sponsor? Anybody? Anybody? We talking anybody about Relax there? Just Create? We talking about Techno Solution? Unlimited Liability? CBD Solution? Talking about Maggie Gagliardi? Who else? You know who we never talk about thanking in sponsorship end, Russell?
Who is that?
We never thank my buddy. My good, good buddy.
Oh, are we talking about the voice, the ear from above?
No, the ear from above. Who's the ear from?
Mr. Eric.
Eric. Well, oh, okay. Yeah, well, we do. We have to thank Eric. Eric's a true rock star. Eric is our guy he's our audio guy. So all the crazy, you can hear all this world in my microphone right now that I'm making all this because I'm holding my microphone because my boom is breaking, Russell. I'm holding it in my hand. But no, you're right. Eric is a guy who does our audio for us. And he literally, when we give him, like right now for us, we're recording this. It's Sunday night. And this is this has to be to Eric by Tuesday so he can put it up Tuesday night and get all that stuff done. But yeah, so I am talking about Eric. But I actually want to talk about one guy specifically, and it's Eddie McDonald, our buddy from Vegas. Eddie's the guy.
Yeah,
Eddie's the guy.
Nailed it for us.
He's the guy who did our intro song. So he put everything together for that, and he pieced it all together and did a really good job. And then Eric came in and kind of cleaned it up after, you know, with all the changes and everything. So Eddie McDonald, dude, you're a rock star. I love you. I appreciate you, Russell. I got to go to the bathroom for a second, so I'll be back.
Okay, we'll be back.